Hello, I'm Howard Husick, Vice President for Policy Research at the Manhattan Institute, and I'm joined by James Copeland, the Director of our Center for Legal Policy, who will be discussing our website, proxymonitor.org. It's a database that contains information on shareholder proposals submitted to Fortune 100 companies over the past 3 years. And, notably, and as per our discussion today, it focuses on trends in those shareholder proposals, some of which reveal non-traditional types of those proposals. We're building on two previous podcasts, one which focused on shareholder proposals which sought to change executive compensation, how much executives at firms are paid, and another which focused on social policy as defined as aspects of corporate behavior which may be not to the liking of some of those bringing the proposals. Today, we'll be focusing on shareholder proposals involving corporate governance questions such as voting rules and the shareholders' power to act between meetings and to take action regarding board leadership. Jim, what makes these kinds of changes worth paying attention to?
Well, they're worth paying attention to for a number of reasons. First of all, these are really the core of the shareholder proposal process. And I don't mean by that they're the most numerous. The social policy proposals we talked about last time are more numerous. But these are the proposals that are most likely to pass. And as we reported when we launched the database, about 19% of these pass. And for certain subsets of these traditional corporate governance proposals, a greater portion than that pass. And when you start looking at it, these aren't perhaps as sexy as direct assaults on executives' pay or what is the company doing about human rights or the environment. But a lot of these are process-based proposals that change the rules of the game. So if you start changing the voting rules for how you elect directors, for instance, then all of a sudden you're dramatically changing the ability of shareholder activists or those shareholders who are interested in changing corporate behavior to get in there and shake things up, so to speak. So a lot of these proposals are actually very important to watch, and there's an interesting interaction effect between this subset of proposals and the other types of proposals we were talking about later, because these proposals could in effect change the rules of the game and empower shareholders in other arenas.
Well, specifically, what's new about them? How were these votes traditionally handled, and what makes the kind of new approaches that you're highlighting on Proxy Monitor different?
Traditionally, there's been a fair amount of variance in how corporations are managed in terms of board structure and board oversight. So some companies have had a separate chairman and CEO. Some companies have had the same person serving as chairman and CEO. Some companies have had staggered boards where the directors are elected to sort of terms where they're not all elected every year. Other boards have had all the directors elected every year. Different companies, some have said that you only need a plurality of votes to elect your directors. Other companies have said you need a majority. And there have been different ways companies have approached the process of saying, how do we solicit shareholder opinion in between annual meetings?
So there wasn't really one set of rules. What's the trend that you see embodied in this group of rules changes that you're highlighting on Proxy Monitor?
Well, these proposals are generally designed to strengthen the hand of shareholders over the hand of boards of directors. And there's a difference in opinion as to whether that's a good or bad thing. I mean, obviously you want companies to respond to shareholders' interests. Shareholders have voting powers for a reason, and that's largely to protect their equity interest in the company, because unlike debt holders and other stakeholders, claimants to the company's assets, they're not able to contract to protect their interests. They're only protected by the fiduciary duties that the management owes them, that the board owes them, and by their voting power, effectively to throw out those directors and bring in new directors if necessary, or to vote for a change in control if the company decides to merge with another company or to sell itself, what have you.
They're protecting the value of their shares.
They're protecting the value of their investments. And so it's an open question as to whether to what degree shareholders should be involved in the business of managing the company, and that's why all these debates we've been having about executive compensation and social policy can be so controversial. But here, what we're talking about is, you know, What does it take to elect directors? So let's take one of the more controversial voting proposals that we talk about in this finding, and one that in fact has not passed in our database over the last 3 years in the Fortune 100 companies, and that's the proposal to allow for cumulative voting for directors. What this proposal would allow is to say, if you have a 9-person board for a company, you could take 9 votes per share, and instead of casting 9 votes for 9 directors, you could aggregate all 9 of your votes for a single director. The shareholders say, well, this allows us to make sure we can get someone on the board that we really like, the shareholders that are pushing this. I think those who are critics of it, including management and those of us that are observers of the process, worry that such a voting rule, were it implemented, would enable a subset of shareholders, say the shareholders representing labor union pension funds, to aggregate their votes behind 1 or 2 candidates and effectively get labor a seat on the board, effectively doing an end run around the traditional corporate governance process here and having a structure similar to what you see, say, in Germany, where labor, in fact, by law, gets board representation. So you're talking about a significant shakeup, and from the perspective of the ordinary investor out there who's an investor through his mutual funds or through small direct shareholder ownership in these companies, there's the concern that instead of protecting your equity interests according to your fiduciary duties, boards would be to some extent captured or at least influenced by special interests who might have an interest in what the corporation does, but the interest of that director who's the labor director on the board may be inimical to your equity interest in the company, because to some degree, if you're paying your labor union more or giving them better benefits, you could be destroying equity value for the ordinary shareholder. So these are, while the rules themselves sound sort of dry and innocuous, they in fact are incredibly important in terms of explaining the levers of power over corporate management.
When you talk about labor having that kind of seat at the table, is there any evidence that labor or any other groups are predominantly behind these kinds of shareholder empowerment changes that you're describing on Proxy Monitor?
Well, labor certainly backs some of these corporate governance proposals, although there's a small subset of individual investors that have really been driving a lot of these voting proposals. The cumulative voting proposals are disproportionately being authored by one activist shareholder, Evelyn Davis, who's in fact the most frequent proponent of all shareholder proposals across the 3 years we cover in our database. But in one particular area of these corporate governance proposals, labor unions have proposed a majority, 58% of all the proposals, and those are the proposals to separate the position of board chairman and chief executive officer, and or to have an independent board chairman, which is effectively the same thing.
Now that sounds like just a technical change. Why is that important?
Well, it's debatable whether having an independent chairman or having the chairman and CEO be the same person is better in terms of board governance. You can clearly make an argument that, well, you may want someone independent to oversee the chief executive, but companies historically have been structured both ways, and it really depends on the company, the situation, how much you need insider knowledge, et cetera, as to which makes sense objectively. But let's step back from it a minute and look at how this is going to work in process. If this is submitted to a company that currently has the same individual serving as chairman and chief executive officer, and it's submitted by a shareholder group, effectively what you're doing is telling someone who's been running this organization, you've got to do one of two things. Either give up your active management of the company that you've been running and that you've been getting paid to run, or have a boss come in over you and oversee you at the board level as chairman of the board. Obviously, this is the sort of proposal that is going to rankle most chief executives unless they're getting ready to retire or to move into a chairman type of role. And so the concern here is that labor unions, being the dominant force driving these types of proposals, could be using this process, putting basically, as they're doing in the executive compensation proposals, directly threatening the chief executives of companies, that they're using the shareholder proposal process to try to extract concessions from corporate management in a way that is helpful to the labor union's interests, but may be against the interests of the majority of shareholders of the company.
Although, to be fair, the labor union's interest here, because they are investors, is not unaligned with the interests of other shareholders. These are the pension funds.
That's absolutely correct. And there's, you know, certainly in our database, which looks at the objective figures, there's no way to know for sure what the motivations of the unions are. I think some more in-depth statistical analysis could be done, which could help to piece that together. But you could argue that it's simply that the labor unions are interested in protecting their investment and that they think a separation of board chairman and CEO position is useful. I think what's particularly telling here is the dominant position that labor unions are taking, however, in this specific area proposal, as they're doing in the executive compensation proposals relative to other types of proposals. And these other sort of activist investors that are pushing for some of these other rule changes have shown themselves relatively uninterested in this particular type of proposal. Of the four large activist investors and or investor families that have been pushing these proposals, Steiner, Davis, Chevedden, and Rossi, none of these individual investors, with one exception, there's only been one shareholder proposal of this type that's been introduced by that group, even though they've sponsored over 108 of the 198 proposals that were identified that came to a vote over the last 3 years for the Fortune 100 in the broad corporate governance umbrella. So clearly labor unions are playing a disproportionate role in this type of proposal, and that's at least a red flag that people should think about and perhaps investigate further.
Right. Let's underscore that. How many shareholder proposals of this type related to corporate governance were submitted, affecting how many corporations over the three-year period that Proxy Monitor is tracking?
Well, the total number of proposals overall is about 230, and there's a couple of these proposals that could fall in one or two different categories. Those where we can identify the sponsor, in other words, where the corporation identifies the sponsor in the proxy statement, there's 198. Of those, 118 of them are by these four individuals or families of individuals that are pushing specific proposals. 44 of the 198 are sponsored by labor unions or their pension funds, and those are disproportionately, in fact, the majority of the proposals that are submitted to try to separate the board, chairman, and CEO position.
Well, thank you, Jim, for highlighting an important new trend that can be culled from the data that is aggregated on our new website at the Manhattan Institute, proxymonitor.org, which contains information on shareholder proposals of all kinds, but specifically social policy, executive compensation, and now shareholder corporate governance questions submitted to Fortune 100 companies 2008 through 2010. I'm Howard Husick, Vice President for Research at the Manhattan Institute, and I've been joined by James Copeland, the Director of our Center for Legal Policy. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Howard.